Madam, I'm grateful for now having all afternoon to be able to discuss the question of disclosure. During the lead-up to this investigation, we've had disclosure on a daily basis. I'll give you a synopsis in a moment of quite what that disclosure has been like. There has been no time to consider or even properly consider these documents. And this relates to an inquiry or investigation date that's been set up long ago. Now, I've listened to and spoken to Ms. Carmi Jones before this afternoon. I've spoken to her about this closer problem, and we've tried to come to, if you like, a united view. The difficulty from the core participant survivor perspective is that we don't as yet have a coherent explanation for this difficulty with disclosure. What we do have is a partial explanation for a large part of these failures in disclosure that's been referred to in the note for disclosure for the Part 1 EBC case study hearing. It's a note dated the 2nd of November 2017. And I'm going to read the two relevant paragraphs. So this is a note from counsel to the inquiry. It is dated the 2nd of November. And in that sense, it's a product of its time because we've had disclosure problems after that date. Late disclosure, page 3, paragraph 10. The inquiry has received late disclosure of large tranches of material from the English Benedictine congregation, including Downside Abbey and School and CSAS. In relation to the EBC, including Downside Abbey and School, since September we have received over 10,000 pages of material, predominantly from Downside Abbey and School. And that was in response to the inquiry's Rule 9 request sent on the 15th of January 2016. May I repeat that date? 15th of January 2016. The note goes on to say the inquiry is working through this material as quickly as possible, but has inevitably been unable to review and prepare it for disclosure to core participants by 31st of October. Paragraph 11. We were notified in late October of yet further material that has been identified as falling within the scope of the inquiry's Rule 9 request in January 2016. We do not yet have a page count for this material, but will endeavour to review it and disclose any relevant material to core participants as quickly as possible. The inquiry has asked Downside Abbey and School to prepare a witness statement explaining the manner in which they have conducted searches to identify material relevant to the inquiry's disclosure requests and the reasons for this late discovery and disclosure of relevant material. It is anticipated that this statement will be disclosed to core participants by 17th of November 2017. So that's what that was, as matters stood, on the 2nd of November of this year. We then do have, indeed, on the 17th of November, a statement from, excuse me one moment, Dom Leo, if I recall correctly, which, Dom Leo Davis, dated the 17th of November of this year, where there is set out within that particular document the response, if you like, regarding this late disclosure. If I read from that document, paragraphs 35 and 36. In April 2017, it was agreed with the inquiry that a further tranche of additional newly generated material would be provided on the 1st of July 2017. As before, newly generated material was identified by the school. A list was sent on 23rd of June 2017. Further newly generated material was disclosed on the 1st of August 2017, following the receipt of a Section 21 notice on 28th of July 2017. Consisting of material including child protection for plenary governor's meeting minutes and safeguarding subcommittee meeting minutes created during the course of 2017, and the resubmission of the 2016 versions of the same. Counsel to the inquiry proposed Downside as a selected institution by way of written submissions on the 3rd of May 2017. Further Rule 9 requests were issued to another EBC institution. No further request was made to Downside. On 28th of July 2017, the chair to the inquiry confirmed her decision that Downside be selected for the EBC case study hearing in November-December 2017. Now, the rest of this particular document sets out a history of the way that apparently material has been looked for, discovered within the grounds of the Abbey, essentially in cupboards, in long rooms, as it's described, mixed up with catering supplies and mixed up with documents that relate to other matters clearly not relevant to this inquiry. So it's a long list and long justification of why there have been problems, it seems. But the heart of this document appears to be at those two paragraphs, 35 and 36, blame being placed by the author of this document onto this inquiry, because it seems that the way that it is being presented is, well, we were chosen rather late as a case study, and therefore being chosen rather late as a case study, what has happened is that we've only just been therefore confronted with the reality of this is actually going to be something we need to take seriously, and therefore it's been, all been a bit of a problem. Now, none of that copes with the fact that the initial request for documentation goes back to January of 2016. What has happened since that time, if we just look at last week, on the 23rd of November of 2017, 111 documents relating to Ampleforth and Downside were put on the CP, the Core Participant Database Relativity, which is the machinery that's used for the finding of documents by core participants. This material related to the EBC, Downside Abbey, various individuals, North Yorkshire City Council, North Yorkshire Police and Ofsted. It's 23rd. 26th of November 2017, 68 documents relating to Ampleforth and Downside. A third witness statement on behalf of Downside from Abbott Madden, and indeed another statement from Tom Davis. On Saturday, we had documents provided by counsel to the inquiry, setting out, if you like, schedules and items that were going to be useful for this inquiry. So, in reality, taking last week, going through to this weekend, as just a snapshot, because it would take too long to go through all of the other late disclosures, core participants have had no chance whatsoever to deal with this material. Their representatives have been going through the material as fast as we possibly can. We have learned, and I think I've got this right from Ms. Carmi Jones, that there may be further material to come. And we're left in a position whereby we can only, it seems, try and do our best in an awkward situation. I'll come back to the alternatives in a moment. What would help, madam, is some explanation from the inquiry as to what has happened. Because if the English Benedictine congregation, if Downside is right, is if arguably if Ampleforth is included within the problems with disclosure, have in fact been providing material late, and that's because the inquiry hasn't been chasing, hasn't been making it clear, that needs to be disclosed, because we need to know what's going on. If, on the other hand, the statement from Dom Davis perhaps conceals a lack of urgency and a lack of care, that again needs to be known. Can we understand the obvious? Because all too often, the lawyers around this particular room are used to dealing with, if you like, a trial or a tribunal. What happens in relation to disclosure with a court or tribunal in the normal form is that it reaches the stage whereby the judge has to take control and has to issue increasingly severe warnings in relation to what's going to happen in a failure disclosure. In a civil case, it might be that that would be affected by way of costs and adjournment. In a criminal case, a judge eventually would reach the point whereby severe sanctions would be put in place, and it starts to get into the question of an evidential point. Because the late service of material by a body that's under examination before an inquiry in this case, or a tribunal or court, may in fact demonstrate an evidential point that the inquiry in this situation should look at. Is there a reason that the EBC is wanting to keep back material? Is this inquiry being gamed by the EBC, by downside, by the late disclosure? Is what is going on here a deliberate act? These are evidential points that need to be considered. And so when we stand up and we say this morning that, well, we need to have good time so that we can make these points about disclosure, we're not just doing it because we're interested in the paper clips and making sure that everything has been filed in good order. It actually translates into questions that this inquiry should be looking at. Now, what are your powers? Well, the powers of an inquiry chair under the Inquiries Act 2005, Section 25, are broad. Sorry, Section 21 are broad. You may make by notice, require a person to attend at a time and place and produce evidence. And the sanction in relation to non-compliance is set out at Section 35 of the Inquiries Act 2005. If a person is guilty of an offence, if he fails without reasonable excuse to do anything that he is required to do by way of a notice under Section 21, your powers are broad. They carry with it criminal sanction. So again, when we are saying that there is a problem with disclosure and somebody is at fault here, the inquiry chair, with respect, madam, needs, I'm afraid, to grasp the issue so that we can actually look at what has happened and consider whether those types of sanctions ought to be put into effect. In other words, the inquiry chair has all of the necessary powers to compel production of documentation. And as we would ask and remind that the inquiry's original order or request for production of material being sent so long ago, 2016, it is hard to understand why this material comes through so late. What is a core participant? Under Rule 5 of the inquiry rules, it relates to a person who has played or may have played a direct and significant role in relation to the matters to which the inquiry relates. Those designated as core participants will be provided with electronic disclosure of evidence relevant to the particular subject matter of the inquiry. They have the right to make opening and closing statements, have the right to suggest lines of questioning, and they have the right to apply to the inquiry panel to ask questions of witnesses during a hearing. Do you mind if I ask the rhetorical question? I don't expect an answer. To say this, how exactly is that meant to be done? With such late disclosure, how is a core participant meant to exercise those rights? How are the legal representatives meant to advise their core participant clients as to the different aspects and ways that we could potentially deal with matters on their behalf? Have you considered when core participants actually get this material? Because we note, of course, that the inquiry understandably is saying, well, hang on, there's a problem here with disclosure to us. But let's look at, in fact, the knock-on effect on disclosure to the core participant. The core participant doesn't get it, nor their representatives, does not get this material when the inquiry gets it. So the inquiry gets this somewhat in advance. They have to do their job, understandably, and we accept that it must be done, of redaction and filter in relation to this material. So the core participant is very much at the end of the list in terms of disclosure. Not only that, a core participant has, through their legal representatives, to comply with timetables for making submissions, in making requests to question witnesses. All of these are timetables that compress the ability of core participants and the representatives to deal with, take on board, and actually consider the material, let alone make such requests. And the effect of it has happened, we can see the effect of it that's happened so far in relation to this investigation, in that the 4 days which was originally set as being the period of time in order to make such submissions, has now been narrowed down to 2 days. But it's the core participants who are given the least amount of time to handle the material, the least amount of time to actually look at it, and the least amount of time to react to it. And guess what? It's the core participant survivors that are those that have in the past been ignored, let down by judicial tribunals, let down sometimes by lawyers, let down and abused by the institutions in which they placed their trust and went to, in this case, and went to their schools. It's quite hard from the core participant survivor perspective to learn, as it seems we're being told by counsel to the inquiry, that this in fact relates to late disclosure from those very institutions that are under examination within this part of the investigation. So what's the practical end result? Well, it seems that we're left with nothing else other than being able to just say to this inquiry that what we will do is battle on regardless. We could, of course, apply for an adjournment. We could ask for this investigation to be taken out of this time slot, put into whatever time would be available next year. But there are core participants that have made plans to give evidence before this inquiry during this period of time. They have made personal plans. They have discussed matters with their employers, with their families, and they've made travel arrangements. And they're facing coming along to this investigation and this inquiry to talk about what happened to them in the past. It would, we submit, be directly unfair to those core participants to apply for an adjournment to take this matter out. Yet it is also those core participants, some of them witnesses before this part of the investigation, that have got the problem of coping with the failures of disclosure. Now, it's already been mentioned in submissions already made that we therefore suggest that when it comes to this investigation, the fetters and the rules that are placed upon core participants and their participation by way of applications with days in advance notice need to be looked at with considerable care. This is going to be an investigation over these next 3 weeks whereby we, on behalf of core participants, will react as fast as we possibly can. But if it comes down to it, if we are making applications either orally or in writing, rather close to the time of hearing, rather close to hearing times, then frankly so be it. May I then make one last point? If you feel I've been hard upon the inquiry panel about your powers, madam, and about the exercise of those powers, this, if I recall correctly, is one of the early of the hearings, the public hearings, that this inquiry is going to conduct. We're involved, myself and Mr. Enright, in other hearings that will take place then in the inquiry investigation as it goes forward. I've already made submissions about the effect of late disclosure at preliminary hearings. The fact of the matter is that the inquiry chair, as well as everything else that you need to do, also needs to make sure that when directions are given about disclosure and about disclosure of material from institutions to this inquiry, that those directions are adhered to. Now, all of you on the panel have had dealings with courts and tribunals in your work. One of your panel members, Mr. Franks, has got direct dealings with the court over many years of service before the courts working as a barrister and knows all too well how important it is to get disclosure right. What must be done, we respectfully suggest, is that timetables that are set for disclosure of material must be kept to observed with rigour.
Thank you, Mr. Steen. You've made some very important points. Thank you very much.